AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Police are still looking for the suspect wanted for shooting five of his next-door neighbors in Cleveland, Texas. Here's CBS's Matt Piper.
San Jacinto County Sheriff Greg Capers says authorities are searching for 38-year-old Francisco Oropeza following the overnight shooting in the town of Cleveland, about 45 miles north of Houston.
He could be anywhere now.
He says what they found was the suspect's cell phone and some clothing, and investigators believe they have possession of the rifle used in the shooting.
Authorities say the neighbors had asked the suspect to stop firing off rounds in his front yard because a baby was sleeping. He then went to their house and opened fire. Parts of Florida are assessing the damage after a rash of severe weather. WPEC-TV's Danielle DeRoss is in Palm Beach Gardens.
Jennifer, a server at Limoncello, says the staff huddled together in their bathroom, then came outside to find nearly all of their vehicles damaged.
Cars on top of each other, bushes down, tree branches down. It's ridiculous.
Trees will need to be removed, windows boarded up, power restored.
Hundreds of Americans evacuating Sudan are expected to arrive by boat in Saudi Arabia. CBS's Remy Innocencio is waiting for them.
Here at the naval port in Jeddah, there is a small but growing number of people dressed in Saudi military uniforms. And our government media escorts tell us there are two ships expected in the next few hours coming from Sudan, but that is about it. The flow of information has been tightly controlled, and it's not clear if either of these vessels are in fact carrying those Americans.
Rival military factions have been fighting for control in Sudan. Another bank collapse could be coming.
Several media reports say the FDIC is close to seizing First Republic and has reached out to several financial institutions for bids to buy it. Last week, the bank disclosed it had lost more than $100 million in deposits, a report that sent shares into a nosedive. American University law professor Gerald Camizio.
No acquirer wants to buy a dead bank. Look for some kind of deal in terms of continuing deposit insurance coverage on uninsured deposits.
If a deal goes through, First Republic would be the third bank to collapse since March.
That's CBS's Peter King. Montana has become the latest state to block gender-affirming medical care for transgender children.
The state's Republican governor signed the bill into law Friday, which prohibits hormone treatments and surgeries for minors. The bill led to the legislative exile of transgender lawmaker Zoe Zephyr, who encouraged protests and told fellow lawmakers the measure would leave blood on their hands.
This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Wachs, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. It is Saturday, April 29th, 2023. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. This is Morning Cannolis. It is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of the most important news events, big stories in law, in government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America. Once again, thank you for joining me. My name is Jim Santel. I'm coming to you this morning from the studios of WAUK in downtown Waukesha, where there's a light rain this morning, as it is throughout the state of Wisconsin, many places in the state of Wisconsin. But we're broadcasting throughout the listening regions of Civic Media in the state of Wisconsin, broadcasting areas throughout our wonderful state on this morning, Saturday, April 29th, 2023. As always, this morning on Morning Cannolis, we're going to be taking your calls, your thoughts, your perspectives, your questions, your comments as well. Objections and observations about the topics of the day. That phone number is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. Also thrilled to welcome the continuing listeners from the show of my good friend and colleague here in WAUK and Civic Media. That's Don Brown. Delighted to have all of you listeners joining us for the continuation of these wonderful broadcasts of Civic Media here in the state of Wisconsin. This is Morning Cannolis. As always, we do have an ambitious but achievable agenda this morning, hopefully also educational and even inspiring. After some time talking about what happened today in history, a number of significant events, both in the far distant past, but also our recent history, 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, and even recent years. After talking about those today in history events, we do have a very ambitious agenda, and that includes lots and lots of things happening this past week in the courts of America, judicial proceedings in both federal and state courts, criminal and civil proceedings. We're going to talk about the significant Tree of Life hate crimes prosecution now underway. We're going to talk about the Jack Teixeira espionage trial, an appearance made by the defendant in that case in federal court just this past week. We're going to chat about the Proud Boys sedition matter. Right now, a jury pending, deciding, determining, deliberating on whether or not the defendants in that case should be found guilty of seditious conspiracy. And then we're going to talk also about yet another case in New York. That case involving E. Jean Carroll, an assault defamation case brought against the former President Donald Trump. We're going to chat about the examination of the plaintiff, what's going to happen in that case as well. And then, because that's just not enough in our first hour this morning, we're also going to be chatting about some significant other events also related to the rule of law and justice and government in America. North Carolina this past week saw a significant decision, a rescission of a previous decision by its Supreme Court. This is going to have a great impact not only upon North Carolina, but upon all of us who are concerned about voting, gerrymandering, and the access to the franchise in America. I'm going to chat about the testimony before the federal grand jury in Washington, D.C., by our former Vice President, Mike Pence, what we know, what we more likely don't know about what he did or did not say. And then we're going to chat about the death penalty, believe it or not, in Florida. Some significant legislation signed by the governor there, Ron DeSantis, that changes dramatically the way in which we impose, at least in that state, the death penalty for all future times. And then going into our second hour, because of those events, because of the significance of criminal events throughout our nation, and indeed because of an event happening just this morning in Cleveland, Texas, we're getting reporting that late last night, just before midnight, yet another mass shooting, five people dead in Cleveland, Texas, described as an almost execution-style killing of five people involving, once again, an AR-15. In the wake of that and many other similar mass shootings in America that continue to terrorize us, to victimize us, this great national crisis that we have in firearms. I'm going to spend some time today talking about firearms, not only about those recent shootings that regrettably pockmark our history, our news every single week, but also about how we understand guns in America, our relationship with firearms. And then we're going to talk most importantly about what we can and should do. We know the things that will fix this problem, at least in part. We know about them, and we need to focus on the ambition and the aspiration to get them done in the future. In all of these things, we ask three questions. What do we know? What are the facts? What do we understand about the world around us? Why are those things important? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to our times in America? And then what do we do about them? What actions should we take? What reactions are appropriate? What are the answers to these major problems and challenges? Once again, thanking you for joining me and my wonderful producer, Anya, this morning for 2 hours of discussion of those issues, the aspiration for law, justice, government in America, how it affects our lives, including the things coming out of our Supreme Court and other courts around our nation. Let's begin by thinking back in time. Today, April 29th, today in history, a number of events, two of them related to the American Civil War in 1861. It was on today's date, April 29th, that the Maryland House of Delegates voted not to secede from the Union, a significant legislative decision underscoring once again this rule of law notion that legislatures are important, not only historically, but presently, as we well know, here in the state of Wisconsin and in other states throughout our country. Today in 1861, Maryland decides not to join the Confederacy, not to secede from the Union, a matter that does, in fact, have some dramatic impact upon the results of that war, as you well know. 1 year later, 1862, April 29th, indeed, Union forces on that day capture New Orleans. Not the end of the war by any means, but a significant military accomplishment at that time. 1916, moving ahead a number of years. This was after 6 days of fighting. The Irish rebel leaders surrendered to British forces in Dublin, bringing an end to what's called the Easter Rising. The Easter Rising, remember that incident? 1916 brought to an end after 6 days of fighting. We know well that the troubles, the animosity, the violence in that part of our world would continue for a long period of time. But on this day, and this day, a brief respite as the fighting ceases and Irish rebels surrender to British forces in Dublin. 1945, one of the major events, again, in history, rule of law history, but more importantly, war history, the history of conflict, horrific conflict, arguably the greatest conflict in all of human history. 1945, in the anticipation of the end of World War II, the Dachau concentration camp is liberated by our U.S. troops, bringing in part some discovery, some understanding of the horrors that happened during World War II at the hands of Adolf Hitler. And also on that same day, on the same day that concentration camp was liberated by the United States troops, Hitler designated Admiral Karl Dönitz as his successor in Berlin on the same day that in his bunker he married Eva Braun. Later on, of course, both of them would commit suicide in the wake of the events of the war as it comes to an end. A very significant day in the history of the world, history of America, 1945, as the Second World War begins to come to an horrific end. 1953 was the first day that the United States had an experimental demonstration of a 3D broadcast, believe it or not, showing an episode of something called Space Patrol on the Los Angeles ABC affiliate, 1953. In 1967, after refusing induction into the U.S. Army, Muhammad Ali, one of the great sports figures of our time, was stripped of his boxing titles on this day, 1967. 1 year later, 1968, the controversial musical Hair opened on Broadway, some songs of which became, of course, anthems and themes of the anti-war movement of the time in the middle of the Vietnam conflict, the Vietnam War. 1974, it was today, April 29th, 1974, in the midst of the Watergate scandal. Then President Richard Nixon announced that he would be releasing edited transcripts of those infamous and famous White House Oval Office conversations. Those conversations, of course, ultimately leading to his demise, leading one day in August of that year to his resignation. The only president in our history to resign the office in the wake of the disclosures that he was, in fact, involved in the cover-up, the obstruction of justice at that time, involving this second-rate break-in at the Democratic headquarters in Watergate, the attempt to cover that up, the successful, for a time, covering that up, but ultimately the disclosure of attempts to undermine justice, to undermine the rule of law in America, leading to the demise and the tumbling of an American presidency. 1 year later, 1975, also a significant event in American history. Back again in Vietnam, the U.S. begins to evacuate our U.S. citizens who are still in Saigon in South Vietnam before they expected the anticipated arrival of the North Vietnamese, the takeover of South Vietnam, including Saigon, this beginning the end of the war for the United States. The U.S. involvement in the war coming to a conclusion today in 1975, as we recall those iconic pictures of helicopters taking citizens from the roof of the embassy in Saigon, evacuating those citizens as the war, at least the involvement of the United States, comes to an end this day in 1975. 1986, the Chernobyl disaster happened. Recall that well. American and European spy satellites first identifying, capturing from their view high up in space, the ruins of the number 4 reactor in Chernobyl, which we know, of course, is in Ukraine. A classic, catastrophic event in world history. Still, Chernobyl, the entire area, subject to and victimized by the releases of radioactive gases at that time. Chernobyl, as we know, inside what we now know as the nation of Ukraine. And, of course, Ukraine just yesterday, once again, the victim of bombing of missiles from the Russian Republic or the Russian nation into Ukraine, resulting in the deaths of many people as that missile hits a major building there, an apartment building just outside of Kyiv. Chernobyl today, 1986, April 29th, the disaster is discovered. 1992, another event in the history of America. After the acquittal of police officers in the excessive force beating of Rodney King in Los Angeles, 63 people were killed, hundreds of more injured, homes destroyed, businesses destroyed in 1992. And yes, in 2011, April 29th, the wedding of Prince William and Catherine Middleton at Westminster Abbey in London. All those things happening on this day, April 29th. Return with us after this break as we talk more about life and livelihood in our nation, the history of our nation, and current events in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in our United States of America.
Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again.
Don't
Don't settle for big box service and pricing when it comes to your flooring. Choose Straight Edge Flooring for quality and personalized service. A family-owned flooring company, they offer full-service flooring solutions from material to install, including on-site dust-free refinishing. Straight Edge Flooring installers are CFI certified and fully insured, with free in-home consultations to simplify your project. Choose Straight Edge Flooring. Log on straightedgewi.com. That's straightedgewi.com, or call 414-779-8931 and make your vision a reality.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Hey, this is Lindsay Kindert at 540 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kindert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Scattered rain showers likely this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Highs level off around 41. Winds out of the west, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast skies again tonight. A mixture of precipitation likely. Lows level off around 33. Mixed precipitation likely tomorrow, 42. A dusting of snow tonight through tomorrow.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 37 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina.
Welcome back to Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, April 29th, 2023. Delighted to have you with me this hour and also hopefully next hour. We have got a lot of material to cover this morning in the areas of law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. We're going to be spending most of this hour talking about four major pieces of litigation, criminal and civil, going on in America. All of them important to understand our lives, our livelihoods, and who we are as a nation. Let's begin by going to Pittsburgh, and in particular, the Pittsburgh Synagogue killings trial. Recall well that Robert Bowers of the Pittsburgh suburb of Baldwin, charged there with 63 counts of the killings of 11 worshipers way back on October 27th of 2018, where that was at the Tree of Life Synagogue building. And it was at that location the three congregations had gathered. Three congregations used that singular, wonderful place of worship, of gathering of faith. Those three congregations, the Dor Hadash congregation, the New Light, and the Tree of Life congregation. What happens? At that time, Bowers goes into the building and commits horrific crimes. We've seen this way too often in America. Ultimately charged with 11 counts of obstruction of the free exercise of religion. The free exercise of religion as established in our First Amendment, resulting in the death, and 11 counts of hate crimes, resulting in the deaths of the people victimized that day. Plainly, another case involving the shattering of peace and security and stability in what should, as in all places in America, be a place of peace and stability and security. Bowers, by virtue of pretrial matters and the progress of those pretrial proceedings in court, has pretty much acknowledged through his attorneys that the events of that day happened as they indicated in the prosecution indictment and charges there. And so what has happened? Well, we began just this past Monday with jury selection. And yes, indeed, this takes a long period of time. All week long, the judge, whose name is Robert Colville, who's presiding over the case, he's a U.S. district judge. He's a federal judge there in Pittsburgh. He has been reviewing the possibilities of seating jurors in this criminal trial against Bowers for these horrific murders, this horrific violence on the Pittsburgh community, and in particular upon the Jewish community there as well. So what's happening? Ongoing jury selection, reviving again, undeniably, the community's memories of that traumatic day way back in October of 2018, but also of the solidarity that undeniably happened as it did following the horrific similar offense conduct, the deaths, the horrific hate crimes event right here in Wisconsin, Oak Creek, in August of 2015. The solidarity of the community that came together afterwards, that was repeated again in Pittsburgh as people came together and understood, even in their great sorrow, even in their great despair over what had happened, that not only should there be lessons learned, but attempts, movements forward to address gun violence in America. We're going to be spending the second hour this morning talking about those kinds of things. Maggie Feinstein, who's the director of something called the 1027 Healing Partnership, said that the city is reminded, even as jury selection goes ahead this week, of what the intensity of this event was, and also reminded of the intensity of healing together. Many people in Pittsburgh and in other places around our country, wearing blue ribbons, which was an emblem of solidarity with the victims, or otherwise displaying them on doors of their homes and businesses. People are looking for some way to say, I stand with you, she said. I stand against hate. That Maggie Feinstein, the director of the 1027 Healing Partnership. What do we know about what's going on in front of Robert Colville's bench in his court? 81 prospective jurors were interviewed. 27 of them remain eligible by the end of this past week, just yesterday, to serve on the jury. That's very normal for the federal trial of Robert Bowers. And that process will continue next week. He is looking, of course, to determine whether or not we can seat and will be able to seat a jury, probably more than 12 people, to ensure that there are some extras there in case there have to be dropouts along the way in a trial that's certainly also going to last weeks, maybe even months of presentation here. A trial that's going to focus a lot, not so much upon what happened, as I said. That's pretty much conceded by the parties, understood by people in the courtroom and outside of the courtroom, understanding that Bowers went in with this arsenal and killed these people. The question is whether or not he should get the death penalty. Bowers' attorneys had previously, as I've indicated in a previous show, offered a guilty plea in return for a life sentence without parole. In other words, he would stay in jail. Prosecutors refused that, said, nope, we're going to seek the death penalty in this matter. This is sufficiently egregious, sufficiently horrible, that most of the victims' families support that decision by the prosecutors to go ahead with the trial, even though, once again, nothing is certain in a trial. Most of the juror questioning as a result of this has been on the jurors' views about the death penalty. The judge continuing to look at the veneer, which is the group of people called in, some of them plainly indicating for various reasons that they would not be appropriately seated on the jury, either because of information they have about the case, a lot of notoriety about this previously, or because of biases that they have. All sorts of issues being the subject of questioning of the jurors. And that process is called voir dire, V-O-I-R-D-I-R-E, two words, French, to see, to say. The questioning of jurors, potential jurors, in seating in this trial coming up before Judge Robert Colville in Pittsburgh. That will continue this coming week as jurors are called in, prospective jurors called in, to determine whether or not their service on this lengthy trial would be appropriate. Plainly a hardship for some of them because of work or caregiving situations. That is also a part of the thing the judge will consider. When we come back, we're going to talk about other things in the courts of America, including once again, Jack Teixeira and his appearance this past week in another federal court, this one in Massachusetts, having to do with espionage. Stay with us for that discussion right here on Morning Cannolis.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm gone to Carolina. In my mind.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for News Talk Radio. streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Police are still looking for the suspect wanted for shooting his five next-door neighbors in Cleveland, Texas. San Jacinto County Sheriff Greg Capers says one of the victims was a child.
Daniel Enrique Lasso Guzman, 8 years old.
More severe weather in Florida. WPEC-TV reporter Danielle DeRoss is in Palm Beach Gardens.
Tornado, tornado.
Stone Kershaw as the funnel cloud came closer.
There's just a wall of white. Just rain. That's all I saw.
After it passed, he saw even more jaw-dropping images. Light poles ripped from the ground. His car and dozens of others badly damaged.
Warring military factions still fighting in Sudan.
It seems the army is determined to flush its rival, the Rapid Support Forces, out of the capital. But this won't be easy. For all the army's superior firepower, the RSF are highly mobile and more suited to urban warfare.
The BBC's Paul Adams, CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
Attention all DIYers! When you're looking for the best products and supplies to take your landscaping to the next level, look no further than Choice Landscaping. For 30 years, Choice Landscaping and Garden Center continues to deliver professional and personal service within a 10-mile radius of Cudahy, but welcomes customers from all over. Whether it's spring, summer, fall, or winter, his Garden Center is open year-round to cover all your needs. So don't wait. For more info, visit choicelandscaping.com. Choice Landscaping. Cover all your needs.
Everyone deserves freedom over their own body. Everyone deserves the right to choose. Everyone deserves access to quality, affordable health care without judgment. And everyone deserves a health care provider who stands firm on these beliefs. This is the Planned Parenthood experience at any one of our 22 health centers across Wisconsin that offer reproductive health care services for everyone. Book your appointment today at ppwi.org. That's ppwi.org, and get the care you deserve, because we will provide that care no matter what.
Todos merecen la libertad sobre su propio cuerpo. Todo el mundo merece el derecho a elegir. Todos merecen acceso a una atención médica económica y de calidad sin juicios. Y todos merecen un proveedor de atención médica que se mantenga firme en estas creencias. Esta es la experiencia de Planned Parenthood en cualquiera de nuestros 22 centros de salud en Wisconsin, que ofrecen servicios de salud reproductiva para todos. Haz una cita hoy en ppwi.org y obtenga la atención que se merece, porque nosotros le brindaremos esa atención, pase lo que pase.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music, and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Devil's Advocates.
Jake from Milwaukee, you get the last word this hour.
Okay, well, Trump is totally innocent. But it's obvious that George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, BLM, with Antifa, and then Hillary's emails, with Hunter Biden's laptop, gas, high, Afghanistan, cut and run. I rest my case, Truth.
What about Benghazi, Jake? You forgot Benghazi.
I'm sorry. And Benghazi, I rest my case.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
We are back. This is Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, April 29th, 2023. We're talking about some of the major stories that have populated our courts, our federal, our state courts, criminal and civil tribunals this past week. Another one, not a trial, but a pretrial proceeding in this matter involving Jack Teixeira. He, as you may recall, is this Massachusetts Air National Guardsman, this young 21-year-old who's accused, served with a criminal complaint, not yet a grand jury indictment, accused of posting classified documents and other secret information online. And the question this past week presented to the magistrate judge who is hearing the case right now in Massachusetts is whether or not Jack Teixeira should be released pending trial. It's called a detention hearing. And that hearing took place over a period of about 90 minutes on Thursday. Lawyers for the Justice Department, who are obviously prosecuting this case, asked that federal magistrate judge in Massachusetts to detain Teixeira indefinitely pending his trial. And they argued, as prosecutors often do, that his history of violence and racist remarks, coupled with his attempts to obstruct his investigation, made him a serious flight risk, one of the two issues significant by any measure in determining whether or not a defendant should be released. Specifically, there was additional information this past week that the government had presented some very disturbing details about the airman's past behavior. Those lawyers had highlighted in both documents and some initial presentations to the magistrate judge some violent comments made by Teixeira. We did not know about this previously. In some chat groups, and his suspension from high school after discussing Molotov cocktails and other weapons, factors that plainly could have influenced the decision to grant him clearance as an information technology specialist. And indeed, in the wake of all of these disclosures, an awful lot of soul searching going on, examination going on about whether or not this young man ever should have gotten a clearance in the first place. So what happens? Well, the magistrate judge's name is David Hennessy. Decided, based upon the presentations of the parties, not to rule immediately on the matter. He said he needs more time to consider the motion, to determine again whether Teixeira is a risk of flight, whether he is a danger to the community as well. Those are the two standards in a detention hearing. The lawyers for Teixeira said that, hey, he never intended to disseminate any information to the news media. It was only to the small group of folks who was online. Judge Hennessy seemed very skeptical of those arguments from the defense. He's described the government's concerns about national security as very legitimate, and indeed they are, right, in terms of the disclosures made by this airman online. The judge, Judge Hennessy, questioned whether someone so young and steeped in technology could be naive enough, these are words from the judge himself, to believe that the classified documents he posted online would be confined to a small group of people, basically shutting down this defense argument, seemingly suggesting that the magistrate judge is probably going to detain him, but not certain. Here's what the judge said. He said, your argument, he's addressing here the defense attorneys, your argument is that he had no idea it would go somewhere beyond this little circle of people. I have to tell you, I find it a little incredible that the defendant did not foresee that possibility. Again, highly likely, based upon what we've seen so far, that the magistrate judge will detain Teixeira in the future. And beyond that, we know that in the context of these proceedings, there was more information presented. Teixeira's father, who's also named Jack, said, my son is well aware. If he does anything against probation, I will report it. The prosecutor, her name is Nadine Pellegrini, countered that. She said that Teixeira's refusal to abide by his signed commitment to preserve these state secrets in the first place, to give up, basically, to surrender his obligation not to disclose this information, proved that he could not be trusted to abide by a commitment to obey the court's orders, including to return. She said, the prosecutor said, he will sign anything you put in front of him. So contest, arguments back and forth, which is the way this works in the federal district court in Massachusetts, being presided over by Magistrate Judge David Hennessy. He has said he's taken all this evidence. He's taken the pleadings, the written documents from the parties, the presentations made to them by the parties in opposition to and in support of detention. And he said he's taken all this under advisement, which once again means that he will decide down the road. Hasn't decided yet. In the meantime, Teixeira does not go free. Again, the prediction here, based upon what the magistrate said, was highly likely that the magistrate judge will find that he may pose some risk of flight. Probably the greater concern, a danger to the community, given what he has done in the past, and the likelihood that he perhaps could do the same thing in the future, even though he's no longer in the employ of the government, of the Defense Department. That risk to the security of our nation, the underlying charges can, in fact, and should be on the consideration docket of the court as it decides what to do in this case. Plainly, sometime soon, the magistrate judge will make that decision and let us know. No trial set yet in that matter going ahead. And we should also anticipate the return of a grand jury indictment. Sometime soon, the U.S. attorney in the District of Massachusetts will present all this evidence to a federal grand jury. It will determine whether or not there are bases under the federal criminal code to charge DeShera under that code with violations of law. Almost certainly here, their standard probable cause almost certainly to be able to be met by the prosecution in returning, receiving, getting that indictment from a federal grand jury there. That is yet to happen. And in the meantime, he remains in custody pursuant to a criminal complaint issued by the U.S. attorney in that district. Lots of things going on in the courts of America. That one, again, important to our future, not only the security of our nation, but also about the manner in which we treat our defendants, presumed innocent again until proven guilty, a very important matter going forward in the federal court in Massachusetts. As always, we enjoy your calls, calling in here to Morning Cannolis, and we've got another caller this morning, called in the past. Glad to have you with us once again, Joe, from Madison. Your comment, your question about our subjects today.
Thanks very much, Jim, and as always, a very useful to hear all the information that you have on the machinations of the court and how that goes forward. I would say, you know, in this week, overshadowing, you know, everything is this corruption on the part of, and I'll call it that, corruption on the part of Gorsuch and Thomas within our Supreme Court, and the weak response of Supreme Court Justice Roberts, in terms of the misconduct of the people that he oversees, when asked by a separate branch of the government, Congress, members of Congress, to come and at least talk about what had happened here and how can this could be addressed, said, no, it's separation of powers, no can do, thanks, bye. The question I would ask, if it's separation of powers, and we clearly something needs to happen in order to get a better sense of, or to the court to get a better, Supreme Court to have a better reputation, and right now it's in pretty bad shape and it oversees everything, you know, really is a corruption that just has seeped in. My question would be this, if they can't get Congress, it's not possible to address this through Congress, what about having the separate branch of the executive tackle this question? Could not there be an executive directive by on the part of the president, a separate branch of government, that just says, we have a minimum standard within our government for all employees in terms of preventing corruption, and list something. You know, I'm sure that they have them in federal agencies, whether that be the, you know, the FBI, the FAA, whatever. Could there not be a statement on the part of Biden, and in terms of speaking of the executive branch, saying that the other branches of government, specifically the Supreme Court, has to stay to a certain standard of conduct? And why not? Why couldn't the executive do this? I mean, the judiciary comments on what the executive does all the time. Why can't the executive comment and help direct what the judiciary does? I know this may sound weird because it's like the judiciary is supposed to be the final arbiter of all things, but I think they've kind of lost that right. So I'd be interested in your comments on that.
Absolutely, Joe. Thanks great, so much, great Jim. Observations as always. And, you know, at base, it is the frustration that you have, that I have, I think most America has, about the inability to do something, right? We've talked about this at great length in situations where the Congress fails to act, which is the predicate for your question. What do you do then when you've got these problems related to immigration and healthcare and education, all these other kinds of things? Should the president then act? And we know that presidents have acted, right? And issued executive orders. Let me give you a little bit of background with respect to my own situation. I worked for the U.S. Department of Justice for well over 30 years as an assistant U.S. attorney. I was overseas in Iraq as the justice attaché there. I was working on Janet Reno's staff for a while in Washington, D.C. And then at the end of my term, served as the United States attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, appointed by the president, nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate. And you better believe that the executive branch through the Department of Justice imposed obligations on me and on all the other 92 U.S. attorneys, including those, again, that are in place right now under every administration, to abide by certain fundamental standards of ethics and behaviors. And that includes disclosures about income, which is for all U.S. attorneys to be exclusive to the Department of Justice and not to have outside employment. Assistant U.S. attorneys can have some latitude in that area, but not U.S. attorneys. We want you to have just one source of income, and also disclosures about your finances. Why? As we've talked before, and Joe, I think this goes to your fundamental question and concern. We want to have public officials who we know are not on the take, if you will. That's a fairly low bar, right? We want to know about your financial status, your background, to ensure that your decision making, the choices that you make in these roles, are not jaded and not in any way compromised by finances or by relationships that you have with other people. All of that plainly implicated, as you said, Joe, at the top of your comments, by these recent revelations about associate justices like Gorsuch and Thomas, and also the Chief Justice. You know, there's this other matter percolating out there having to do with his wife, who is a so-called headhunter, very successful in Washington, D.C. and around the country, placing attorneys in various law firms, other positions of responsibility in our nation, some of whom also appear in front of the Supreme Court, who appear before her husband. So that issue also out there. All these kinds of things getting an awful lot of attention, not for the first time, but certainly heightened, Joe, as you and others have indicated recently. So the question is, what do we do about that? And again, the Chief Justice has said just this past week that he is going to respectfully decline the recommendation, the invitation by the senator from Illinois, the senior senator from Illinois, to come before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talk about many things, presumably including a code of ethics. Now, does he have to do that? No, he doesn't on the invitation. Very interesting question that's out there about whether or not the United States Senate, if they were to issue a subpoena, a directive from the Congress to appear, would that, number one, be done? And number two, would the Supreme Court Chief Justice honor that subpoena? We've talked a lot about this, the importance of subpoenas as a mechanism for finding out the truth. Very, very significant, very interesting question today raised in the wake of the Chief Justice's diplomatic but very clear decision not to come to another branch of government and talk about these things. And all of that then leading up to your very interesting academic and not ridiculous notion that somebody's got to do something. And as I said, the executive branch is certainly with respect to executive officials in all of the cabinet areas, including the Department of Justice, including U.S. attorneys, has the absolute right to impose obligations and reporting restrictions and other responsibilities with respect to executive branch individuals. Would be fascinating as a pure rule of law issue if the president, in the wake of the legislature's failure to pass any of the legislation that's pending right now to establish those codes of conduct, and that they could do. I think most people regard the notion of legislation imposing not decisions about how they should decide cases, or even worse, what they should decide, but the mechanisms for their conduct. Obviously, Congress does do a lot of things with budget and other things related to operation. People generally view the prerogative of the Congress to impose a code of ethics on the Supreme Court. That is an option. But if it doesn't do it, would the executive branch, does it have the authority to do that? And as we found out in the past, sometimes yes, sometimes no. We'll talk more about that and other issues right after this break. All of those issues related to the rule of law, justice in America. Come back and join us here on Morning Cannolis.
Broken hearts, I know, but I truly can. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come, come, come on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come, come, come. Oh, no. They'll come running to me. Here is the main thing I want to say.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weichert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all.
Civic Media,
608-819-8255.
Are you an experienced industrial painter, drywall finisher, or want to be? Do you want more than a job, but a high-paying career where your interests are well represented, ensuring a safe work environment? The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades of District Council 7 wants you. Bring your knowledge or ask about paid training. Learn more now. Call Tom Coyne, 262-488-4839, 262-488-4839, or go to the union's website, iupatdc7.com.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Scattered rain showers likely this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies. Highs level off around 41. Winds out of the west, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight, a mixture of precipitation likely, lows around 33. A mixture of precipitation likely tomorrow, high of 42. A dusting of snow tonight through tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 37 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Cowboy. We are back in this final segment of this, our first hour on Morning Cannolis here on the networks of Civic Media, Saturday, April 29th, 2023. And right before the break, chatting about this very interesting notion presented by Joe, one of our callers, that in the wake of the failure of other branches of government to act, if the Supreme Court itself doesn't impose upon itself the same code of ethics that is applicable to the federal district court judges and appellate court judges, doesn't do that, even though it's promised to do so, if the legislature doesn't enact legislation, again, pending in both the House and the Senate, likewise to impose legislatively through the will of the people, the representative body of the people, if it fails to act, where else do you go? Well, you necessarily look down Pennsylvania Avenue, as Joe suggests, and go to the executive branch. Could the president impose upon the judicial branch the kinds of obligations to report that the president certainly does with respect to all executive branch officials, certainly at an appointed level, and others who are civil servants as well? Fascinating notion. Certainly would be tested in the courts. We know, again, in the past that executive orders have, some of them have been upheld, many of them recently stricken down by the Supreme Court. Would be fascinating if indeed the Supreme Court were to strike down a very executive order that an executive, the president, were to impose upon them. All sorts of issues, and goes fundamentally to this notion that our government is a government of separation of powers. The United States Supreme Court needs to take care of this problem before it gets to that point. Chief Justice Roberts and the other 8 members of the court need to do what they have been obliged to do for a very long period of time and get their house in order. Appreciate that phone call, that very interesting thought by Joe, and advocating for something to be done in Washington, D.C. about this continuing problem that goes to legitimacy of the court, the perception of impropriety, and the legitimacy ultimately of its very decision-making authority. We're going to be spending some time in the weeks ahead talking about these major decisions coming up from the Supreme Court in all sorts of areas. We're going to start to issue those opinions fairly soon. All of those premised upon the notion that they are the result, even if you don't agree with all of them, of deliberative thought and consideration, facts to law, a lot of facts, based not upon outside influences, including financial, familial, other connections. What happens? What happens to the legitimacy of those decisions when that connection to the facts and the law is severed, or at least compromised by a sense that there, in fact, is not that ethical core? We'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about the Supreme Court in just a moment or two, also in connection with something happening in North Carolina. Let's get back to another court case happening again in America. This one in Washington, D.C., not too far from the Capitol building, not too far from the White House, and very close to the Supreme Court right there in the District of Columbia. The seditious conspiracy trial against the Proud Boys is now in the hands of the jury. They've been deliberating for several days now. Recall well that the Proud Boys leader, Enrique Terrio, and four other defendants saw themselves, again, as a result of the encouragement by Donald Trump, saw themselves sort of as his army, and heeded his call to attack the Capitol after Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. Defendants and defense attorneys in that case, which has now concluded during the course of their oral argument, said, you know, completely misunderstood. The violence was unplanned, not the result of Enrique Terrio, not the result of anything the Proud Boys did. It was unplanned, and that a conviction in this case would criminalize political protest. Well, in fact, the evidence presented during the course of this weeks-long trial, a huge amount of evidence to just the opposite end. Charged with seditious conspiracy, a high-level charge in the federal system, 50,000 chat messages back and forth produced during the course of this weeks-long trial, videos of members of the Proud Boys and their leadership, podcasts of the particular defendants talking about the reasons for going to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, lots and lots of witnesses, which may in the end be the linchpin to the determination made by this jury about whether or not these defendants should be found guilty of seditious conspiracy. Those witnesses included some of the former Proud Boys themselves, and they previously pleaded guilty in this matter to seditious conspiracy, to other matters, and they agreed to cooperate with the government. And that cooperation included providing information, providing testimony during the course of this trial, now virtually completed. Also, police officers came forward during the course of this trial, front lines to describe what members of the defense group, the defendants in particular, were doing on that day, the abuse that they suffered, the affronts that they suffered from those rioters, including the Proud Boys themselves. In addition, there were a number of people, including two of the defendants themselves, not cooperating with the government, who decided to take the stand in this trial in recent weeks. Enrique Terrio was not one of them, but two others did sit next to him during the course of the proceedings, and they took the stand to somewhat mixed reviews, mixed results probably, in the course of this trial presented to this jury. The Justice Department, of course, theory is that these senior leaders of the Proud Boys were responsible for the planning, the organization, the execution of all of this. And of course, we also know that this comes in the wake of other convictions. Senior leaders of the Oath Keepers, also the subject of seditious conspiracy charges and convictions in the past. That included the leadership of the Oath Keepers in previous trials, also the same kind of thing. So there is already precedent, recent precedent, for the imposition of a guilty finding, a determination by a jury, again, in those previous trials. Now in front of the jury that is now looking through all of this evidence presented during the course of these several weeks, determining whether or not all of these defendants should be found guilty of the offense conduct here. Interestingly, Terrio himself, part of his defense during the course of the trial, he was in Baltimore on January 6th. Why? Because he'd been charged, believe it or not, with other offenses in the District of Columbia, and the judge had effectively banished him from the cities. But the government case in this matter included evidence that Terrio was directing this assault on our Capitol, even from Baltimore, and that the mere fact that he was not physically there does not mean that he's not responsible for this attempt to overthrow our country, to undermine the counting of votes on that day. The jury resumes on Monday as they continue to deliberate on whether or not the Proud Boys, these particular defendants in this case, this right-wing extremist group, whose members stormed the Capitol on January 6th, should be found guilty of these very serious offenses and along with many, many others, the subject of criminal prosecutions. Those prosecutions continue, by the way. People on the ground, aside from this Proud Boys and Oath Keepers prosecution, those continue. A recent estimate just this past week that there are yet another 1,000 defendants, aside from those already charged and convicted of offense conduct, another 1,000 or so yet to be brought into the halls of justice based upon the January 6th event. We'll talk more about those down the road. And in our second hour, move on to other matters in our courts, including the E. Jean Carroll matter, the civil case pursued this week in the New York court. Stay with us for that discussion here on Morning Cannolis.
Was covered with snow. So was the turnpike from Stockbridge to Boston. Though the Berkshires seemed dreamlike on account of that frost.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues. From the team that brings you the...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.